Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to the next episode of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, here to break down the Falcons' hire of Raheem Morris as next head coach. Yes, we will have Alan Sturck joining us in just a moment. He is getting ready, coming in just a few minutes, so we'll have him here shortly. We're going to be breaking down this hire, talking about Atlanta's next head coach, Raheem Morris, who was in my top three, was not one that we talked about a ton on our other shows, because first it was Bill Belichick, then it was Bobby Slowick, and then it was Raheem Morris that had really caught the eye of everyone and sort of slowly won the team over the course of those two interviews. Definitely someone I like. Wasn't, again, my top choice, but definitely in my top three pretty consistently throughout the process because of his experience, because of how much everyone seems to love him. And I really like Morris. I think he deserves another shot. I think you can tell by a lot of things that lots of people are pulling for him to get this second chance. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, the pluses, the minuses, you know, talk about his previous head coaching record, which is a point of contention among Falcons fans, I can tell. Right off the top, I will say that was, 17 years ago that he was last a head coach in terms of permanent, not interim. And he was 33 at the time, which obviously was too early for him to get that chance. He's now 47 years old and a different man who's had a lot more experience. So we'll see if that makes a difference. Sometimes those second chances are big. I know Bill Belichick, it was a recipient of such a second chance after some very questionable years to start his career. So we'll get into all that before we dive in too far. Let me bring you guys a quick word from our sponsor, betonline.ag. Folks, it's playoff time and the road to Vegas goes through San Francisco and Baltimore. BetOnline is your number one source for Falcons odds, San Francisco odds, Ravens odds, football odds in general, stats, trends, lines, with everything from point spreads to hundreds of player performance props. So make sure, no matter what you're betting on, no matter where, to head to that website, betonline.ag, today to stay updated on all the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And when you do sign up, remember to use our promo code. That's Believe, B-L-E-A-V. When you sign up to get those special perks. So thank you guys so much and appreciate BetOnline for sponsoring the show. Remember, betonline.ag is the website. The promo code is Believe, B-L-E-A-V. And let's go ahead and bring in Alan Sturck here. Hey, Alan, how we doing?
Hey, dude. It's been like almost a month?
Yeah, I guess it's somehow been quite a bit, but because we didn't do the post game for the last show, and then I guess we haven't been on the last couple of Wednesdays either, so it's just been a little bit of a hiatus here, but good to have you back. Like the new hair setup.
Thank you.
Yeah, looking, man. Good.
Oh, winter here, so I got to protect my ears. I got
exactly.
Beanies, and I hate dealing with hat hair. Yeah, I wish I had the locks like you were. How do you wear hats?
I do the beanie life, but I put the ponytail like below where the beanie comes down, so it just like sits on top of it, kind of, and that works pretty well. But you got to be able to put it in the ponytail or the man bun or whatever before you can do that. So up until then, it's a very dicey situation, guys. He is Alan Sturck at Alan Sturck. Welcome in, Alan. We got Raheem Morris in the building, Alan. Very interesting hire. We did just have a donation coming from Artie's saying wasn't his number one pick, but I think it's a good choice. I believe in second chances. According to a lot of people, he earned it. And as a Falcons fan, I'm rooting for him and the success of the team. Also, love that we can enjoy the tears of the Bill Belichick fan base. Yeah, well, that is a side benefit there. And I know we had another one from Grant Watson that we'll get to in just a second. But Alan, instant reactions. What'd you think about this one? Because it kind of came in late after they'd interviewed Bobby Slowick, and I was kind of expecting to kind of that it would last like longer, that we would take this through the weekend. So,
because when you were looking at the trajectory of like this, the buzz, I think Raheem Morris was being mentioned a lot, maybe initially right after Arthur Smith got fired, and maybe a bit on Wild Card Weekend. But besides that, there are a lot of talk about Slowick. Obviously, Belichick's been on news. Mike Vrabel was in Arthur Blank's house. So you're seeing a lot of these different candidates. So Raheem Morris, it did catch me off guard. I'm definitely in favor of the move. Wouldn't have been my first choice just because, you know, I've been raving about Ben Johnson for about, if you listen to this podcast consistently, I'm a Ben Johnson fanboy. And I really like Mike Vrabel. Those two were probably my top two picks. But that said, Raheem Morris, over a decade since being a coach, and he's absolutely put the work in on both sides of the ball. That's why I think it's so fascinating about Raheem Morris is, I don't want to call it revival because, look, Tampa Bay was a tough position. Let's not forget, the early 2010s, the NFC South was a really good division with New Orleans and Atlanta competing at week, year in and year out. And Tampa Bay was kind of dysfunctional. So I just think Raheem Morris, while he had to mature a bit, he's clearly putting the work in the past decade. And I think we should all be coming in a move. Whether if he was your first choice or not, that's definitely worth the conversation. But I will say, this man's a leader, and just based on what Mike Tomlin has said, Sean McVay has said, you have to admire what he's built.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you look around the league at sort of the universal praise from other coaches who he's worked with, because that's one of the things I think is so big on about Raheem Morris is that he has some of the most extensive relationships in the NFL. He's worked for so many different staffs. He's worked under so many different coaches. He's been involved in all these coaching trees. He has been sort of beloved everywhere, and he fits in pretty easily with any system. It seems like, you know, he doesn't necessarily have a rigid system that he runs that he's going to go out there and put on. It's more, he's more of an adaptable coach that's going to work with what he has. And I think that's the one thing that we really didn't see with Arthur Smith. And it's something that he said when he came in the building, but pretty quickly we saw that that was not the case, that there was a very specific system that they wanted to run that they acquired the players for, but it wasn't really flexible. It wasn't really bending. And, you know, kind of the culmination of that was this insistence that, like, no, Kyle Pitts is going to block. We're going to make sure he's blocking and make sure he's a good blocker. And, you know, that didn't go great for anyone. It didn't go great for Kyle Pitts. Didn't go great for the offense. Didn't go great for Arthur Smith, obviously. But I think, you know, Raheem is a guy that I think the biggest thing that you can bring up with him is that he is so flexible, that he does work with anyone, essentially. And he's worked on both sides of the ball. I think that's a key thing that you rarely see with a lot of these head coaching candidates, especially the young ones, which Raheem Morris is still a young coach. It's kind of crazy that he was a head coach like 13, 14 years ago or something like that.
Exactly.
And he's only 47 years old. he was so young when he got that first job. So kind of crazy to see how far he's come. But when you get a job that early, I think it's natural that you should get another chance, even if the first chance doesn't go super well. But curious, you know, what do you think about, I mean, you brought it up, like, that was a tough job to go into. Obviously, it didn't work out great. He lasts 3 years in Tampa Bay and then is fired. But, you know, how much stock do you put in that first stint? Is that something that concerns you at this stage?
It's irrelevant to me because I just think it was so long ago. And you know, look at the quarterback in the situation. Like, it was well documented. Josh Freeman had a terrible work ethic. It was hard to really coach him up. So when you have – and look, based on what we've seen this season, how much of a bad quarterback situation can doom you. It's going to, regardless of the roster, because I think Tampa Bay did have a good roster in early 2010s. But also, I think just Raheem Morris, I love his humility, just the way, because he instantly could have just been very hard headed, be like, no, I'm a defensive coach. But the fact that he came to Atlanta as, I'm going to be assistant offensive coach, then I'm going to be a wide receiver positions coach. Like, I think he just wanted to show what he's capable of, because, you know, I think being a head coach in this league, it's hard to come back to being that. So I think he just had that mentality. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And you saw he was on the coaching staff with the Falcons. And you know, I remember listening to an interview with Austin Hooper. It was on Adam Lefkoe's show. And Austin Hooper was talking about just that season, how Raheem Morris was always dialed in on these meetings. He would get all the wide receivers and tight ends. And he would just make it like a real hangout session. But you learn a lot. Like, they would pick out every detail. And in those film sessions must have been fantastic, because in 2016, who wouldn't want to watch film watching that offense? But it's just another example of just how much Raheem Morris, coming from a defensive background, just wanting to really work with the receivers and, you know, get the intricate aspects of, like, you know, trying to improve their game, whether it was a rookie, Austin Hooper, or even someone like a Mohamed Sanu, who was a veteran. So I just think his humility is what makes him, you know, such a desirable candidate, just knowing that, you know, he easily couldn't, because we see a lot of hard-headed coaches in this league, guys who don't want to adapt, but Morris did. And now look at him. I think he deserves it. Sorry.
Breaking up over here. Yeah. No. No, but I agree. It's like, it's rare that you see a coach bounce around to so many different positions and find success at all of them. And we'll definitely get into, you know, his years in Atlanta and his years in Tampa Bay and his years kind of all over the place, culminating in the Rams, that Super Bowl win. Dude, have $10 from Grant Watson. Thank you, Grant. He says, love the hire. I think he and Fontenot will work great together. Looking forward to see what coordinators he brings in, and based on his reputation, should help with free agent acquisitions. Home run. Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things about Morris. One of the strongest things on his resume is the depth of relationships he has with coaches from all over the league. He's going to have, and I think the Falcons mentioned it, you know, that he had like a 3-deep list of candidates for like every position. And it's rare, especially when we're talking about comparing him to someone like a Bobby Slowick, who is my top choice. Like at this point, like Slowick has only been an NFL coach for a handful of seasons. He does have relationships, but it's not anywhere near as extensive. So, you know, it could be like what happened with Dan Quinn, for instance, where you saw that first set of hires that he had were rock solid. You know, they did have to do some tinkering on the defensive side, but nailed the Shanahan hire and all that. And then after those like first guys were gone, there wasn't really anyone else to go to. Like they started scrambling to fill, they tried Sarkisian, then they sort of scapegoated him. And then they were completely out of ideas and went back to Dirk Cutter, which was absolutely disastrous. But yeah, you know, with Morris,
any times with Dirk Cutter,
right? Yeah. With Morris, I don't think you're going to run into that problem, because he's been involved with so many people. Like it's funny, because I think for a lot of coaches, it would be like, oh, well, you know, Zach Robinson, that's who he's going to get. That's who he worked with. But like for the Falcons, it's been like, oh yeah, they're going to talk to him. You know, that's one of the guys he's interested in. It's like, really? Like, I think most teams would be like, oh, well, we expect that's going to be the guy, and that's who we're zeroing in on. And they may very well land Zach Robinson. I think that'd be a great hire, but that's just like one of his guys. Yeah.
Fun thing with Zach Robinson, he used to be on the PFF podcast, similar to Bobby Slowick. He was on with Steve Pazol, Sam Monson, Mike Renner. Hey, the PFF route worked for Houston.
Yeah.
So maybe it could work for Atlanta if they bring. I've heard very good things about Zach Robinson. But then again, I think he has interviews with Tampa Bay, maybe Carolina. So there's a lot of influx there. But I think another fascinating thing with just Raheem Morris is, you know, what about former players? Like, talk about, you know, back in the day, you know, those, I don't know, we'll call it back in the day, but 4 or 5 years ago, like Ricardo Allen's assistant coach now in Miami. Could he bring Ricardo Allen here? I know Mohamed Sanu is talking about being receivers coach. And I know you don't want to go too player heavy, but we've seen the NFL. Look at Dan Campbell's staff.
Yeah.
He's brought in a fair amount of players, whether it be a Deuce Daly or even Hank Fraley. So sometimes going the four player route could be hugely beneficial. So like you talked about the connections, I think I'm very fascinated to see what Raheem Morris put together, because obviously he's just so likable and people want to play for him.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, you look at D'Amico Ryans, huge success story there. Jerod Mayo just taking over for the Patriots. Like these guys are, I mean, the former players, I think part of it is that the NFL is like growing, you know, very slowly, but they're growing towards actually allowing former players to coach, and especially head coach. When before, for reasons that we all know and don't really need to say, like a lot of former players weren't getting opportunities to be head coaches, because we know why. And it's slowly getting better. But I think Morris is definitely a guy that's maybe going to be more willing to try out those former player connections and give guys opportunities. And I think that's one of the best things about the hire is those connections. And you know, it's one of the things, same thing with like a Dan Quinn. And obviously it ended up not working out for Quinn, but if you get a guy that everyone loves, it definitely makes things easier. It makes it easier to get staff. It makes it easier to get players in the building. And as we saw with Dan Quinn, you can't just be a nice guy. Just being a nice guy is not enough, right? You actually have to, you know, coach effectively and game plan effectively and all those things. But that part of it does help things. And that's probably part of the reason why the team went away from Bill Belichick. You know, we've seen articles about it today. Like, Belichick wanted total control. He wanted to potentially even shake up the entire team's like leadership structure in the front office and all this stuff. And ultimately the Falcons were like, yeah, we're not going to do that for a guy who's going to be here for a couple of years. And Bill Belichick may very well not coach in the NFL this year, but let's take a short detour into the little nugget that dropped along with the hiring news, which is that Rich McKay is going to be transitioning out of a football operations role more back into the business and Atlanta United. And I think a lot of people assumed like, oh yeah, well, McKay is not going to work with Belichick. So that's going to happen when Belichick gets hired. But they actually don't go with Belichick, and they also do move McKay out of football ops. And I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, McKay's the devil and he's been secretly sabotaging the team behind the scenes. Like, we have no way of knowing. Like, maybe Rich McKay had the good ideas and they didn't listen. I mean, how do we know? You know, we don't.
Yeah, so I think,
yeah, it's all just, if we can't really quantify it in any way, I mean, there's no way of really knowing. But for whatever reason, they are deciding to move him out of there. What did you think about that decision?
I think it needs to be a total overhaul, because after how disappointing the last several years have been, I can totally see why Arthur Blank's just like, let's just start fresh. You know, we've tried with McVay, because I think Jeff Schultz posted that after Dimitrov and Quinn were fired, Rich McKay got shifted back into more of a football role. So for whatever reason, he's always been his right-hand man. But you just see the results on the field. It just gets to a point where the team needs to win. Like, we need to put something respectable out there. And it hasn't been that way. So I wasn't too surprised about it. It's wild how once Arthur Smith was fired, Rich McKay quickly became the number one enemy in Atlanta. Like, that Monday, it just seemed like once that press conference happened, there was nothing good to be said about Rich McKay. And I don't know him too well. He seems to be someone that is, once again, very well connected in the league. But from a football operations standpoint, if you watch the Falcons in the mid-2000s, they made several bad personnel moves. And I don't want to judge someone off, you know, at this point 20 years ago, but it's just like, all right, that's kind of what our framework is for Rich McKay. But it's just hard. Like, I don't like going to speculation. I like actually seeing actual reports and things where we could really go on in terms of peace. But I guess it just had to happen. Yeah. That's the short way.
It seemed like it.
Yeah, start fresh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if it was just like, this is becoming a distraction and we just need to nip it in the bud. Like, it's becoming mm-hmm. too much of a flashpoint sort of thing, and we need to kind of just move on from this. And
I do want to mention, though, the 14 interviews, maybe something transpired during those interviews where things started to get dicey and Blank looked at McKay like, why? You know, yeah. Once again, pure speculation, but like, I don't know many teams ever had 14. I know Falcons want to do their due diligence in interviewing as many as possible, but 14 is pretty alarming. You
said. That's a huge amount. I mean, almost record setting probably at this stage to have that many candidates in here. Pretty crazy to see. But they clearly wanted to be exhaustive, and they talked to all of the top guys. I mean, they did. I think in years past, we've been like, wow, they left out some guys that I wish they would have talked to so-and-so. This year, they talked to everyone, and it seems like they – and another thing I would say is, you know, I know we had a donation from George saying – George Costanza saying that, you know, while Raheem wasn't his first or second choice, he wanted, you know, Bieniemy, Harbaugh, maybe Ben Johnson. But he thinks Raheem is a good choice. We still just need to get the quarterback correct, which is absolutely true. And we'll definitely talk about that more, but they didn't wait to talk to Ben Johnson. And I don't know if that's because they assume Washington's hiring him, because I think that's kind of the scuttlebutt, is that Washington's zeroing in on Ben Johnson. They really like him. So the Falcons were like, okay, well, we're not going to try to fight Washington for him. You know, I don't know that he like didn't impress them or something like that. We just didn't really hear any buzz about Ben Johnson compared to these other guys. So, you know, they choose to not go for Ben Johnson. They choose. I never felt honestly that they were interested in Harbaugh. I know they planned to interview him twice, but again, if you were like that interested, you would have made a point of getting him back for that second interview before the Chargers had a chance to snap him up. And I never really felt like they were that serious about Harbaugh. But
agreed.
You know, with Belichick, I mean, it seemed like that was almost imminent. Like, it was like, okay, well, they're going to fulfill their rule obligations and then hire Belichick. And we saw that reported from like 5-6 different sources. And then it didn't happen. And I know some people are saying, oh, well, the sources were wrong. And I think what people need to understand is that sources tell you what they hear. And usually the sources are in the building. So they're actually in the meetings hearing the conversations. Not always, but a lot of times they are. So they're not just lying. They're telling you what they're hearing. But what sometimes happens and what seems to have happened here is that things changed. Something changed with that process. Maybe that was the second interview not going super well. Maybe, you know, cooler heads prevailed. Maybe there were, you know, various factions in the front office that were sort of against, you know, Belichick and were really trying to work to convince Blank not to do it, because we know Blank wanted Belichick. That is established. But they don't go that route, and they do take their time, go another week and a half or so, and then ultimately end up with Raheem Morris. What did you think about the Belichick thing? Do you think it was something that was about the power structure, or do you think it was more than that?
I had to be power structure involved, just because what's happened the last year. NFL is what have you done for me lately league. We know this, and Patriots have been a disaster. We saw the whole Matt Patricia, Joe Judge experiment, just one of the worst offense league. And then this year, even the fundamentals, like you watch the Patriots this year, the some of the core elements of a Belichick team weren't even there. So I think between that and probably there being a power struggle and just looking towards the future, I think that's where kind of things went awry. But once again, that's just pure speculation. But
yeah,
it's just I have a hard time believing, though, just given the lack of success from your likes of Matt Patricia, Josh McDaniels, Belichick's going to have a hard time convincing an organization to fully invest in him if he's not willing to be adaptable. Because yeah. I think some of his systems are archaic. Like, it's not working anymore. It's been proven. Like, you see disasters. Like, back to two of your right-handed men, we're talking about Patricia and McDaniels, got fired mid-season. It takes a lot to get fired within NFL season. Like, things have to really go awry. So I think it's lack of being adaptable. And I think people are also – I think a lot of organizations now have a long-term outlook. They're not looking to win 2-3 years and then having to start over again. I think a lot of teams, they're thinking long-term. Look at Tennessee with Mike Vrabel. They're like, all right, we really need to build a now 3-4-year plan. We're not building to just compete now, and then we got to start over in 3 years. So,
yeah,
it's – and I totally respect the fact that Arthur Blank wanted to do that. So, mm-hmm. And why not do it with someone that has really strong ties to the organization?
Yeah, and I think that's why they made the right decision. And you know, you guys know I wanted the offensive coach. You know why I favor offensive coaches. Raheem isn't really one or the other. He's more experienced on defense, but spent, you know, what, 4 years with Atlanta as the passing game coordinator and wide receivers coach. So, like, he's coached on both sides. He understands both sides of the ball well. He is more going to be that CEO type. I doubt he's going to call plays on either side. He's probably going to get a defensive play caller for DC and an offensive play caller for OC. The Falcons haven't had that in a while. You know, it obviously when Dan Quinn first got here, I think they went with
Richard blanking Smith.
Out. Yeah, Richard Smith. I was like, Rick Smith. No, that's the GM. It was Richard Smith.
Yeah.
But
very forgettable name, even though they didn't make the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And then eventually Quinn took over the defense. That was a disaster. You know, we have Marquand Manuel that worked for a while, but you know, you could tell it was that coach's baby, more or less. And we've been doing that, you know, Mike Smith for a while was doing that as well, for a time. But again, probably closer to Mike Smith than anything we've had over the last few years is what Raheem Morris would be, more of that overall leader. And I think it's interesting to go back to that path. Curious what you think about the decision to go with more of the well-rounded sort of CEO type coach as opposed to offense or defense.
I never really had a huge preference. Obviously, look, this league's operating offense, but I just want the most qualified can. That's why I was all in on Mike Vrabel to an extent, because I just think Mike Vrabel has consistently elevated teams. Like, that's what I think, just not to put down out there Smith again, but you just also want a leader too, man. Like, someone that you know. And look, the players played for Arthur Smith, no denying it, but just someone you could go to a press conference and you don't have to be ashamed. Like, I know it sounds silly, but it really got disheartening at some point. So now it just, you have someone over Raheem Morris who's always conducted himself well. I thought he did a fantastic job as interim coach, which I would like to talk about. You know, that team, look, that team was a bottom five team. You know, they're 0-5 for a reason that year. So the fact that they played some really competitive football, nearly beating the likes of New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Kansas City. Let's not forget that year who was in the Super Bowl. It was Tampa Bay and Kansas City. New Orleans won the NFC South. So I never really had a strong preference toward – I just wanted someone that was ultimately the most qualified. And, you know, I know everyone wants that Shanahan-McVay guy. Hey, look, maybe some of McVay's magic rubbed off on Raheem Morris. And Raheem Morris is probably in those offensive meetings, so he probably learned a thing or two. And hopefully the end goal is he gets some of McVay's assistance, because whenever – usually a coordinator leaves a job, he usually brings a couple of assistants with him. And I think Raheem Morris, you know, with, you know, Sean McVay, I think who wouldn't want McVay's assistants? Because we see so many, kind of like Kyle Shanahan, like that coaching tree, it's just looking more like hit, success story. So if he could bring some of those guys a la Zach Robinson, you gotta love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of why you bring him in, because you know he's going to probably be able to build one of the better staffs, one of the deeper staffs, and you hope that that helps to alleviate some of the problems that you've seen when you do lose your offensive coordinator. Like, if you do happen to get that good offense in here, you're probably going to lose your offensive coordinator. So if he's a guy that does have that deep roster of coaches where you can have that pipeline of, you know, quarterbacks coach, passing game coordinator, offensive coordinators that you can kind of train up and bring up, which is, you know, what you've seen a lot of these teams do that manage to stay relevant on offense. That's how you do it. That's the one way to do it. And it, you know, the other thing is being flexible too. Like, if you don't have this rigid scheme that needs a very specific set of personnel to run, then it's going to be easier to find success with a new offensive coordinator. So we'll see who they end up settling on. But I do think that's one thing that Raheem will bring is a very deep staff. They'll be able to have a good staff in here, and excited to see who it is, because again, we've heard Zach Robinson, you know, obviously he's got ties to Giro Evero as well from their time in LA. You know, and we'll see who ends up coming over here, and maybe there will be some players like you mentioned. I'm excited to see this staff much, because and maybe it's selfish from a content angle, right? But like, if Bill Belichick was hired, that would be the most boring staff. And it's like, okay, well, he's gonna get Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and you know, it's gonna be
Steve.
Yeah, it's gonna be, you know, the Belichick sons, and yeah, that's pretty much it. And there's just no great. There's nothing really exciting or interesting about that. And, you know, none of those guys have really shown much, obviously, but, you know, outside of Bill Belichick and that system. So I, you know, part of this is obviously relief that it's not Bill Belichick. I can't remember. Did we ever weigh in? Was Belichick someone you were super interested in or not?
I was intrigued. Look, he's the greatest of all time. I'm going to be at least intrigued by it.
Yeah.
And if he wanted to let go of player personnel, I would have been for it. But if we're going to have Bill Belichick all hands on everything, that's too much of a red flag for me. I can't trust him in that aspect, because like, New England, people forget 2021, New England was an 11-win team.
Yeah.
Like, we saw on Thursday night, I know it didn't mean much or didn't represent much, but they shut out the Falcons, completely blew out. Like, that 2021 Patriots team, like, it wasn't like once Brady was gone, the Patriots didn't completely fall apart. Like that first year with Cam Newton, they were competitive. Second year, they made it to wild card round with Mac Jones. It's just these last years where Belichick took more of just control. Like, it just, like, the offense, it's worse than the league pretty much. And it's just, how can you be confident about that? And from a guy who seems not just hard at it, but someone that just never gets receivers right. And you look at the NFL, I think wide receiver is one of the most important positions.
Yes. It's gotten more important. Yeah.
Yeah. And like his inability to evaluate that, it's just, and then look, you want to look at the quarterback position, you definitely could do that as well. It's just the lack of adaptability and I think a long-term outlook, because Falcons are a young team right now. This isn't a team. I know they signed some defensive veterans that were over 30 years old, but when you think of the Falcons right now, it's the young offensive core. And how is that going to mesh with someone like Belichick? So I think that was enough of a red flag for me. But I can't deny that I was intrigued by it just because of the aura of Belichick. And his defenses still are really good.
Yeah, yes.
That's one thing. Even without Judon and Christian Gonzalez, I thought that Patriots defense played well this year. So,
yeah.
Overall, I just think this was the best year to get a head coach. Like the quality of candidates was exceptional. So I'm glad they made the most of it. Hopefully,
yeah. Raheem. Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing is like they talked to 15 guys and they came away thinking Raheem Morris was the best choice, which is, I think it says something. And obviously, you know, they'll be raked over the coals if some of these guys they talk to end up working out and Morris doesn't. But that's the case no matter what. I mean, that's just how it always goes. Like, you have to hit. Coach, quarterback, you got to hit. You know, you got to hit soon. And that does bring me to one thing, which is this kind of, there's a lot of hate for the hire out there. It's obvious, you know, fans are not happy. Raheem Morris was not. And I say fans, you know, I mean, certain parts of the fan base, obviously fans, Falcons fans are not a monolith. You can tell just by looking at the chat for 2 seconds here, but it's not super popular among sections of the fan base who are hoping for a more exciting hire. Obviously the Belichick contingent, which was the second largest contingent, by the way, based on the polling that we did, and the anti-Belichick group was the largest.
What a dynamic.
Yeah, like, it's funny.
That just shows how polarizing Belichick is at this stage of his career.
Yeah, it was funny to see that. But, you know, so I think the reason, and this is obviously, I can't speak for all you guys that have issues with the hire. You have your own reasons for it, I'm sure. But largely, the common refrain seemed to be his head coaching record is poor. And that is correct. But everyone always lumps in the interim stuff with that, which, I mean, he took over an 0-5 team. So, like, and you're never really getting a great look at a coach when they are an interim because this is not their team. They didn't pick the players necessarily. And he was the defensive coordinator prior, but that team was awful. I mean, we know that that 2020 team was really bad. They had stretched the cap way too far. It took the Falcons like 3 seasons to dig out of that mess that was the 2020 season. So I definitely would not hold 2020 against him. But the Tampa Bay stuff, and you brought it up, that team was not in a good place when he took over. Very similar to the team he took over in Atlanta. Bloated roster, aging roster. They had to make a lot of cuts to get cap compliant. And even through all that, he did have the 2 losing seasons. He also took Tampa Bay to a 10-6 record and the playoffs with Josh Freeman's, like, you know, arm falling off, essentially. Yeah. And, you know, people forget that. Like, it sandwiched in between those 2 bad seasons with a bad roster was a playoff year. So one of those 3 years as a head coach, 10-6 in playoffs. Arthur Smith never did that. You know, just saying. So, and again, that was like, what, 15 years ago. So, like, it was a long time ago, too. And obviously, you would think a guy who's continued to coach around the NFL and get all this experience is learn something from that. And again, it's sort of a lack of context to the record. And I think that's what I'm getting at is this is a hire that's difficult to evaluate on its face, because if you look at the basic stats, the win-loss record as a head coach, the interim coaching record, and the ranks of like his defenses that he's coordinated, none of that is like, oh, wow, this is elite. Like, this is a bunch of number one defenses or this and that. I think what he's done is you have to examine it more closely to get the full story. And I'm curious what you think about that, because I know you were also talking about that the Tampa Bay thing was a little bit more complicated than the record sort of played out.
I don't know. I just, like I said, we want to look at like recency. That's why I'm kind of more focused on than what happened with Tampa Bay, because that's just over a decade ago. And he's admitted interviews. He was immature at the time. Like, I think it was the end of the 2011 season. He lost control. Even like Donald Penn, who's a very well-respected left tackle, saying we have no command in the locker room right now. So I think it was just more of a humbling, if anything else. Because let's not forget, he worked under John Gruden. I know controversial name, but John Gruden is still someone that has huge amounts of success. So learning from that, you know, put him in that position in Tampa Bay. But I think some of the concerns, if you want to look at, maybe we'll go a little bit more schematically, it's just with the Rams defenses. I think it is a fair critique saying, okay, those Rams defenses were filled with future Hall of Famers. Okay, you know, you could mention that. You could even say some of his maybe scheme-wise was a little questionable, like Michael Hoyt, a 310-pound man. Why is he dropping the coverage, spot-dropping nearly 200 times? Do we have to see Zach Harrison, or if Clayce Campbell comes back? Like, are they going to be dropping the flat and just having to just cover?
We got Lorenzo Carter for that, okay? He's the best he's the best spot-dropping edge. Yeah, he's the best spot-dropping edge in the NFL. We're golden. We're all good. We'll just have Lorenzo Carter do that. Yeah.
Boom, solution.
No, he's not perfect, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know he likes to play more zone while this team was just playing more man, and then they play a lot more two high. I wouldn't have Jesse Bates, who did play a lot two high under Lou Amarumo, but I don't know, maybe Jesse Bates is better suited for a team that plays more cover one. So these are just some of the more schematic things. But then again, Raheem Morris has been around, so maybe he could change things up knowing his personnel, because we do know how limited that Rams defense was going into this year. There were players that I think 75% of that roster people couldn't name going into the year, you know, if you weren't following the Rams. So I think those are more concerns. Like, just okay, he learned a lot from Sean McVay, but you do wonder, just given like that championship team personnel wise, they were phenomenal. So yeah, you know, if you want to question, was it just, you know, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey, etc., did that carry him? You could bring that up. So I think that's more of a thing rather than just what happened in the early 2010s, because he was a totally different person at that time.
It was too early, you know, and a lot of guys, they don't make it to the second chance, you know, but, and I do also find it funny, you know, Bill Belichick was the same way, a guy that struggled in his first opportunity and then got a second chance and ran with it, obviously became the most successful coach of all time, but no one talks about that. They just talk about Morris's bad record. So the other thing with Morris is he's a Super Bowl winning DC. I think a lot of people look at the Rams and are like, oh, well, the stats don't look amazing. Like, why this Rams defense has been like top 15, but it hasn't been like elite. Well, you have to look at the details of that, particularly this season, where I don't know if you guys like heard any of our offseason shows or any stuff, but a lot of people predicted the Rams defense to be like the worst defense in the NFL because they had to gut the entire thing. They had a few veterans left, but like, for the most part, they had to do a cap purge because the bill came due. That defense was like entirely rookies and UDFAs, like except for Aaron Donald and a couple guys. Yeah.
Aaron Donald and Ernest Jones were the only two defensive players from the Super Bowl winning team. So that's how much they had to transition.
Yeah. So it's like it was a downright miracle that defense was top 20 and got them to the playoffs. Like, I mean, it wasn't a great defense, but it was very serviceable.
The second half against Detroit. The first half, they got torn apart, but Ben Johnson's offense is torn apart plenty of defenses. But that second half, they shut down Detroit. So, you know, there's moments where Raheem Morris, and if you want to see more blitzing, I definitely want to mention this. Because if you remember in 2020 when he took over, I think Floyd Lucon had, if not, he had close to 5 sacks that year. Like, he was just running those double A gap blitzes. And this is like peak Floyd Lucon and like the last of Deion Jones. So if you like blitzing, I think Raheem Morris is going to bring it. And I did want to mention 2019. So Dan Quinn took over play calling, but that defense was at a historically bad rate. And I think by like late October, I think Morris took over first and second down play calling, and Jeff Ulbrich took down third down. I might have mixed them both up, but I know Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem Morris like traded downs. And we saw 2019 how much that team played better. So just to show you, like, in very difficult circumstances, and I think one of the biggest things as a head coach is you want to see how they pivot. You want to see how they elevate talent that don't necessarily have the greatest traits. Like, they're more limited. Raheem Morris, to me, in 2019 with Jeff Ulbrich, did a tremendous job taking over defensive play calling. I thought he did excellent in certain role. Like, that team was a complete disaster, and it made that team watchable at a time where, you know, the organization, to me, was at its worst since the Vic era. Like, that 2020 Falcons team, when they were 0-5, they weren't watchable. Like, it was pitiful.
Yeah. So, it was over.
It was just like, enough's enough. And then they go and destroy the Vikings, and they destroyed the Raiders, and they beat the Broncos, I remember, pretty definitively. And you know, I mentioned the close losses. So I think that's one of the biggest strengths you can look at Raheem Morris is his past year with the Rams and what he did for the Falcons in 2019 and 2020, where it's just making the most with limited personnel. And you have to do that in times in the NFL. You know, not everyone's blessed like the Ravens or the 49ers. You're not going to work with an organization that's going to land draft pick after draft pick. So I think that's one huge thing with Raheem Morris is that he's proven in various moments of his career he could work with, you know, limited personnel and, you know, bring the best out of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the one thing I will say is another common refrain that I wanted to address is that, oh, well, if Raheem was so good, why didn't they hire him after the interim stint? And the simple answer is that they weren't going to do that. Like, there was no way that they could do that. And maybe if he had like won out or done something crazy, but like they had to reset. They couldn't keep the same regime around. We all know, like, there was you know, there's a stink on everything with that regime. They had to they fired the GM. They fired the coach. They basically completely cleaned house. There was no way you were going to be able to keep Morris. Like, even if you liked him, which they clearly did, they just hired him back. But the situation was never a good one for Morris to get hired. You look at something like the Raiders, where like that was a short-term thing with Josh McDaniels and didn't have all the baggage of the Super Bowl loss and all this stuff that's weighing down this regime. They could make that move and be like, oh, and Antonio Pierce, you know, what, I think he went, what, 4-4? He did a good job.
5-4.
But
think about this. That was even a definitive decision, though. There was speculation that they weren't even going to hire him. So that's how hard it is, the interim coach. Interim coach has to really do something extraordinary to get an immediate chance.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
as well as Raheem Morris did, look, the team is still 4-7, and they clearly need a restart. Like, if Antonio Pierce didn't do what he did and have players like Max Crosby and Davante Adams pretty much say, if we don't hire you, we're leaving, like, you got to do something astronomical as the interim coach to get the job. So I think it's ridiculous if anyone says, oh, why didn't they hire him 3 years ago? Like,
yeah, that's not really
99.9% of the time, do not do. Like, this Antonio Pierce thing is once in a blue moon. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, the other thing I'll say before we transition to slightly different stuff here is that people saying that, oh, well, Arthur Blank and you know, McKay and this team can't hire good coaches. And that's just wrong. Mike Smith was the best coach this franchise has ever seen. Did he win a Super Bowl? No. That doesn't make him not the best coach this franchise has ever seen and a very good football coach. Dan Quinn took this team to a Super Bowl. They made the playoffs they made the playoffs multiple times. Obviously, it fell apart. But he was the second best coach the franchise has ever seen, arguably. Arthur Smith did not work out. 3-7-10 years. Not a disaster, certainly. But certainly not what you would want. So that was more of a miss than the others. But even that wasn't like, look at Urban Meyer. I mean, you can look around the NFL and see all these teams making disastrous hires left and right. The Falcons did make a disastrous hire. Bobby Petrino. But, you know, but that's a long time ago. Yeah. And, like, ultimately, the last three hires, Smith was a miss for sure. But, like, Mike Smith and Dan Quinn were both good hires. It didn't work out to win a Super Bowl. But if that's the only thing that you judge a hire on, you're going to be disappointed 99% of the time, because guess what? Very few coaches win Super Bowls. Only one out of 32 teams wins the Super Bowl every year. If you don't win the Super Bowl, it doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't mean that your coach is bad. It's just like, it's damn hard to win a Super Bowl. It is. I mean, the Bills are talking about firing Sean McDermott. He's made the playoffs like 5 straight seasons. Like, you know, 4 or whatever it is. Like, it's damn hard to win a Super Bowl. That can't be the only thing you evaluate. The best way to win a Super Bowl is to make the playoffs every year. And then you go from there. And as we've seen with the Bills, unfortunately, the Bills very cursed in that regard. And the Cowboys, like,
that's another one.
It's not just enough, but, like, we haven't made the playoffs since 2017. Let's at least start with getting somebody that's going to take us to the playoffs. And I have a really good feeling about Morris. And that sort of leads me into the next thing, which is, everyone's talking about, you know, the quarterback situation in the draft and how this will affect that. And, you know, I would say we probably need to see who the OC is before we know for sure. I know we had Roe Staxon with the $2 donation. Thanks, Roe, saying Justin Fields and Raheem Morris for the second chance duo. I mean, that could work out. I know 10cam01 said that we should also look into getting Caden Ellis's brother, Jonah Ellis, in the draft. I'm a fan of that also. And then Adam White with the 5. No question. Adam, if you meant to leave a question there, let me know in the chat and I'll get that for you. But appreciate the donation. I'm curious if, because I think when we thought it was Belichick, I was like, okay, he's going to get a veteran. It's probably going to be like Kirk Cousins, maybe Russell Wilson. Maybe they'll try to trade for like Geno or something. And if it was Bobby Slowick, it was like, okay, they're drafting a quarterback. They're going to do whatever they can to try to get with these quarterbacks. With Raheem, I feel like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it could be either way. And I think with Raheem, I'm starting to lean more towards, oh, I think Justin Fields maybe with Raheem Morris. But I'm curious what you think about the quarterback situation now.
Yeah, I think expectations are high. Like, he's going to shoot for the moon. Like, I don't think he's going to, not necessarily trip for number one, but to me, it's got to be either Fields or Cousins. I see this team needs to get someone really credible that's not on the decline. To me, I think Russell Wilson would be very underwhelming. He's played.
I thought him
really
and Belichick made sense, but, like, yeah, I don't like it otherwise.
it's just, it's too formulaic, and like he doesn't really stretch a field. Like, I just think you need someone with some upside. And granted, look, Cousins is a risk coming off a torn Achilles at his age, but I mean, Cousins and Kevin O'Connell, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, O'Connell and Morris were on the same staff for like a year with the Rams. Maybe. I think there might be some ties there from the, because when did Kevin O'Connell get hired by the Vikings?
Oh man, I think that was the same year as Arthur Smith.
Okay, then they may have just missed 2021. Nevertheless, I just can't see them. I just think they can't put a wild card out there. I think that's the point I'm trying to make here. They're not going to sign some journeyman like a Gardner Minshew or even a Ryan Tannehill. I think this team, they got to learn from their faults, and the organization will push them for it. So whether it's Fields or Kirk Cousins, I think those are the two. If not, then yeah, they'll probably go towards a draft, but I think maybe I'm leaning more towards Vera just because there's going to be a lot of desperate teams in that draft. And I don't think Raheem Morris wants to just completely get rid of draft capital, because I think he kind of wants to build his vision now. So I don't think they want to go berserk when it comes to trade 3 or 4 picks to go up. You know, you don't want to make the mistake that Carolina did. You know, learn from them when it comes to trading too many picks. So I can see him going the veteran round, or, of course, trade for Fields, which I think is a medium risk, high reward move.
Yeah, I think that's the kicker, is that depending on how this draft like shook out at the top, you could have had a great opportunity to get up for a quarterback or no opportunity. And I think right now there's very little opportunity, because the Bears are probably going to take Caleb Williams, and the Commanders are definitely going to take whoever the Bears don't take, and the Patriots are probably going to take Jaden Daniels. So there's no one else that you're trading up for at that point. Maybe if you love Bo Nix or Michael Penix at 8, you could go that route. But like, there's questions with both of those guys. Are they really franchise caliber quarterbacks? Maybe, maybe not. JJ McCarthy, no. and I don't really think that's the route they're going to go. You know, JJ McCarthy round 2. Okay. Somewhat interesting, but yeah, I mean, I think Justin Fields makes way too much sense. And obviously whoever they get at offensive coordinator, that will, you know, it'll determine a lot, I think, in terms of the system and sort of things like that. But Justin Fields just would slot so well into this offense. And like, if they're trying to build a team that like fits the city of Atlanta, like Fields, obviously local, you know, played at Georgia briefly, and then obviously Ohio State as well. But he fits what this team could do really well, you know, having that dynamic run threat at quarterback. And you would want him to pass more and probably not run quite as much as the Bears were doing. They were kind of, I mean, he was getting like 12 plus carries. He was getting more carries than Bijan.
You just had to throw that in.
I've been waiting for that. Yeah. I've been waiting for that one. But, you know, obviously the passing with Fields is a work in progress, but he made strides this year that I think shouldn't be ignored. And you've got the weapons for him. You know, you've got the weapons. You've got Drake London. You've got Kyle Pitts that are perfect targets for him. And they need another receiver. We know that. It's probably another draft need. And the thing with Justin Fields that I really like is that it's not going to take a first. So you're still going to have 8 to spend on that edge rusher that you desperately need. And at 8, you're probably going to have your pick of the best edge rusher in the draft, whether you think that's Dallas Turner or Jared Verse. I don't care. Whichever one you like, either one is fine with me. But that is one of the more fascinating things that obviously we'll talk about, I'm sure, a lot over the coming months is what do they do at quarterback, because that's the next most important decision. And then probably after that is the coordinators. But yeah, I mean, do you think it's going to end up being Zach Robinson? You know, do you have any thoughts on the potential DC at this point? Who are guys maybe you're interested in?
I wish I had more of an idea. Still trying to come to
there's a million like names floating. Yeah.
It's been 24 hours since then. So like, I don't know if Raheem Morris will get like a former head coach in there, maybe to be the defensive coordinator. Who knows?
I wonder if like Jerry Gray sticks around too. Like, I don't know. He's still here. Great,
yeah.
Yeah.
There are some appealing options out there when it comes to like defensive coordinators. Like, you know, if I'm not opposed to Wink Martindale if he wants to get crazy. You know, the Falcons have the personnel play, man.
Yeah.
So that's something to take into mind. But I don't know, it just there's been so many moving parts when it comes to coaching. It's hard to really lock down an offensive coordinator. Like credit to Chicago. Like, I would have looked at someone like a Shane Waldron, who I think did a fantastic job in Seattle. I think that was a really good hire by them. So, TBD. If you have anyone in mind, let the listeners know. But I really don't.
OC, you know, it to me, Zach Robinson is the one that makes the most sense. You know, DC, there's a lot of guys, and I would love Evereaux. And, you know, I know Anthony Weaver maybe is someone too that you look at. They showed a lot of interest in him. We'll see if Evereaux gets the call to come back to Carolina, but, you know, if they're changing their head coach, you know, that's a little bit dicey. Are you going to force someone to stay if they don't want to, you know? So we'll see what happens there, but, I think if they could get Evereaux, that would be a slam dunk. I know Brandon Staley's name has come up, and like, he was a bad head coach, but again, some guys are just coordinators. Maybe he's just a better coordinator, but I wouldn't like him as much, I don't think.
I think he has Green Bay written all over him. Him and LaFleur have a great relationship. I think that's such a LaFleur hire. I do want to mention, and now the name's escaping me. Oh, I just had it too. So I'm thinking of teams that are kind of, I don't know, in transition, because like with coordinators.
Yeah. Joe Brady, maybe too.
He's available. Yeah. Joe Brady's another one.
Like, if he doesn't go back to Buffalo, I would love that. Yeah.
But how about, given what's going on with the Commanders, long overdue, Eric Bieniemy comes in.
Oh, yeah. No, Bieniemy as OC would be sweet. Yeah, I'd be down.
If we assume Ben Johnson's going there, I just have a hard time believing he's going to want to keep Eric Bieniemy.
No, exactly.
So Eric Bieniemy will be available, and
that would be cool.
I don't know the relationship there, but I don't know. People have been wanting for like 4 years. You know, this is the time to get it, because I think Eric Bieniemy, he wants to take on a challenge. And because you look at Washington, he kind of went there. Yeah, he had a relationship with Ron Rivera, but he wanted like to prove that he could build something without Patrick Mahomes. So maybe he looks at Atlanta as the next opportunity to prove he could be a head coach by going to a situation that couldn't be more unstable when it comes to the quarterback position. So, I think that's something to monitor, just because I have a hard time believing Bieniemy is going to be in Washington. So he will be available.
Mm-hmm. No, that's another good one that I did not think of. I would say, like, to me, the three that including, like, I mean, I think like Zach Robinson, Joe Brady, Bieniemy would be the three. And like, honestly, with Bieniemy, like, I hate it for him, but like, it doesn't seem like anyone's interested in hiring him as a head coach. So maybe if he wants to be your play caller, you're less worried about somebody stealing him for whatever, you know, for the reasons that he's not getting head coaching interviews. But
you know, I'll mention one person. I did not think he did a bad job. He got a bad rep in Buffalo, but Ken Dorsey was all right. I kind of like Ken Dorsey. I know he's in Cleveland right now, but I think Buffalo hit a panic move. Now, granted, I think Joe Brady was a slight upgrade over him.
Yes,
the way they utilized James Cook and Shakir. But I saw enough from Ken Dorsey where I wouldn't be opposed to move. But I don't think he'd be like the top candidate. I think you look for – I think Bieniemy or Zach Robinson will get everyone all fired up.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting one too. Yeah, I know. And it's like, you know, obviously Morris worked really closely with Zach Robinson, so that one has a lot of potential. You would think if Morris like is like, hey, Zach, I need you to come here, that he probably has the advantage over anyone else getting him to come to Atlanta, and he'll have total control too over the offense.
And it's attractive. Like, it is. You want about Atlanta, but that offense is attractive.
That's it.
Yeah.
You got like, you five starting offensive linemen all set. Like, how often do you get that? Like, all you do is drop in a quarterback. That's and a receiver. They do need another receiver, but like, it's not even a wide receiver one. It's like, you just need a wide receiver two. That's a lot easier to find than a wide receiver one. So,
from like a narrative standpoint, it's gotta be exciting for like offense coordinator, because like the Falcons were just every week publicized as such an underachieving offense. Like, it's just going to waste. Whoever helps like revive this offense and makes them like a borderline top 10 unit, they're going to get like universal praise for it. Like, they're going to become an immediate hero. So if you want to look at it from like a, you know, narrative standpoint, you know, if offense coordinator can figure things out offensively, you're quickly going to become a huge popular figure, because I think the general consensus is people want to see the Falcons offense become what it should be. Like, this is an exciting group. So, hey, I guess I didn't mean to do a sales pitch there, but
no, it's true. Yeah. I have to imagine that's why Bobby Sloak was so interested, because he's like, I just get a quarterback in here and we're cooking. So, I think, it's going to be really interesting to see there. You know, I think Joe Brady's really interesting. Fontenot has a great relationship with him. So if Buffalo decides not to retain Brady because he's just the interim right now, then I would not be opposed to jumping on that one either. Because I you know, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more head coaching looks. The Falcons did want to talk to him about their head coaching position as well. So I wouldn't be shocked if some of these guys they talk to about head coach, if they don't end up getting hired, if Atlanta's able to bring in some of them as coordinators. You know, we'll see, depending on how things shake out with their other opportunities. But love those guys. You know, and again, like this is a rosy interpretation of the hire. Obviously, Morris could not work out. You know, at this stage, like I was already like relatively high on Morris. He was like my number three candidate. So, you know, I'm taking a pretty positive look at it. I know some people are not convinced, and there's no, you know, way you're going to be convinced until you start seeing wins. And that's perfectly fair too. I mean, we all need to start seeing wins. You know, the goodwill is going to run out quick if wins don't start coming in. And I know you needed to take off soon, Alan. So
yeah,
did want to give you an opportunity if you had any final thoughts. Guys, he's at Alan Sterk. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
That's why I'm go from like a communication standpoint, because you look at, I don't know how much, did you watch Hard Knocks though with Mike McDaniel?
I haven't seen that one yet, no.
Okay. I think just from a relatability standpoint, like, I know some older fans are going to be like, oh, they're going to roll their eyes. Oh, we got to go this generation. But look, there is a new generation of athlete, and you have to relate to them to some extent. And I think Raheem Morris does a fantastic job of that. Like, just being able to communicate, you know, be a leader. Like, it can be hard as a head coach when it comes to having to relate to younger players. And not to go back to Belichick, but I do think Belichick, once it kind of comes short on that aspect. Like, look, you want to be a disciplinarian to some extent. Like, because I want to mention, I thought Raheem Morris handled the Tack McKinley debacle really well. Remember when Tack McKinley was like going crazy on Twitter? And Raheem Morris is like, he knows he's immature and we're going to handle it internally and we'll figure it out. And then I think 3 days later, McKinley got released and you kind of know where his career went.
Yeah.
But I think Raheem Morris, just from a communication standpoint, someone that, you know, just, it's such a generic thing to say you want a leader, but like, it's so important to have a leader, because we've seen how bad organizations and bad teams have fallen apart because they just don't have leadership.
Yeah.
So I fully believe in him as a leader. Now it's just a matter of schematically, you know, what's the personnel vision? How are you going to execute? Because I think the person here is as good as it gets. That's what you have to be excited about.
Yeah.
Now it's just a matter of how you can apply your scheme. Because look, I'll admit, I was thrilled about Arthur Smith 3 years ago. And I will totally,
yeah, me too. Yeah.
Did not work out. And I will eat my words again if Raheem Morris doesn't work out. But I just think what he's proven with the Rams and, you know, what he did with the Falcons, I think there's a lot to be excited about here in just his development from, you know, hitting a huge low after, you know, what happened in Tampa Bay. And just, you know, we love a good comeback story. And I think there's more reasons to be excited about it. It's just now a matter of, let's see the long-term vision. Let's see what you do at quarterback. You know, let's see how you build this defense up. Because let's not forget, if this defense declines, you're going to hear some talks like, oh, we had a great thing with Ryan Nielsen. I think that's nothing you have to keep in mind. But yeah, overall, I think there's way more positives than negatives here with this move. And I think that's one of the biggest things to be excited about. And look, if some people want to be hanging up on, you know, the whole McKay blank dynamic, you know, if you want to spend your energy there, more power to you. But I think you do research and see what Raheem Morris has done over the past decade. Be excited. Yeah.
And you look around and you see just universal, like everyone's excited for him. Everyone's talking about how much he's deserved a second chance, and from major figures around the NFL, pretty much up and down. And, you know, that's the type of stuff you can't necessarily just look at a stat sheet and see. Sometimes there's more to it than that. You know, it's hard to quantify, but Maybe there is something here. Well, we'll see. But yeah. Alan, appreciate it.
Quick question for you.
See if
any names are missing here. We have AJ Terrell, Caleb McGarry, Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, Grady Jarrett. I think those are the only Falcons left that Raheem Morris coached. Am I missing anyone?
I think that's
you got the two. You got the right side offensive line.
Yep.
You got Jake Matthews.
Yep.
Terrell was the rookie then, and of course, Grady Jarrett. Long live Grady Jarrett, the man. But besides that, I don't think anyone else.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, nope.
Oh, hey, Keith Smith. Can't forget.
Oh, there you go. Keith Smith.
Yeah, and God. Oh, and the kicker. Hey, we can't forget that the great one. But yeah, he's kind of working with, I don't want to say a completely new roster because the names we've mentioned are all pretty prominent figures. But it's going to be fascinating. You know, what can he get out of the players that he did previously work with, especially someone like Terrell, who, you know, there's still a lot of high expectations on. And there's some also concern given that he doesn't come off the greatest season. But you know, what can you do to elevate him? So, yeah, it's a cool dynamic. Just, you know, him coming back. I just hope people don't hold it against him. Like, oh, you know, I hate the whole retread thing. I just think he's someone that could, I think the whole stigma behind being a retread, I think he's someone that could overcome it for sure.
Yeah. And he will have to, you know, he's going to have to prove himself just like any head coach would. I mean, you can only last so long on hype, but yeah, I think this one is one of those sort of sneaky good hires. That's not exciting, but can really be impactful. And a lot of it comes down to the staff and can they figure out quarterback? Because I don't know who could honestly have success without getting the quarterback right. So hopefully he has more success than Arthur Smith did in that regard.
Yeah. Last thing before I sign off, you had Slowick 1, Morris 3. Who was your second?
I think Ben Johnson was my second.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. It just, everyone has like their own wish list. And given that the team interviewed 14 people, you could have made a top 10, which probably would have been a kind of waste of time. But that's how long it was. So
exactly.
I know you're very offensive minded. So
But it's Morris is kind of half and half. So that's kind of why I was interested. Is like, well, if they're not going to hire one of those offensive guys, then maybe go for the half and half guy that's going to be able to bring in great coordinators because he has so many connections. That's sort of my thought process behind having him at three. So, but yeah, Alan, appreciate you making the time today to talk about this hire. Guys, he's at Alan Sterk. Anything else you want to let people know about Alan before we let you go?
Well, we're definitely going to start back to writing. We had a few weeks of waiting. We've been patiently waiting. It's been hard to write much just because you're way on the move. But, you know, we'll start writing. And then we're working on a whole website series of just doing positional reviews. So I'll be writing about the cornerbacks and safeties on the roster. So I'll get to that within probably a week or two. But right now, it's Raheem Morris everything. You know, get ready for all sorts of content.
Raheem Morris season.
Trying to see what's going on with these coordinators.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy couple of weeks, that's for sure. So, Alan, really appreciate your time. We'll definitely be having you on a lot, I'm sure, this offseason. Thanks again for making the time tonight.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Have a good one.
Yep, thanks. All right. Yeah, you can see me again. Hi. Yeah, guys, we got a little bit more here real quick. Going to get to some donations and then... let me real quick get to this week's prize picks because I was going to do the prize picks on a mock draft, but with this blowing up my Friday, you know, I didn't have time to finish the mock draft. So the mock draft will be coming soon. But real quick, going to get to the prize picks for this weekend. We're going to go with the special. So there is a special running right now where Christian McCaffrey for a half rush yard. So you can take that one, more than a half rush yard there for Christian McCaffrey. That one's basically a free square. Going with Brock Purdy, more than 267.5 passing yards against Detroit. Detroit is a decent defense, especially against the run. But against the pass, I believe they're like 28th in net yards per attempt allowed. And the 49ers should have Deebo Samuel back, and that should help the pass game out. And I think that the 49ers are going to try to really air it out against that Detroit secondary, which is a weakness there. And then this third one, I was having a hard time deciding on this one. I know Isaiah Pacheco is questionable for this game. So if Pacheco is healthy, I think he's going to get all the work as usual. You know, I think he's officially questionable, but it seems like they're pretty convinced that he's going to play. And the nice thing about Prize Picks is if he does not play, then this square will just sort of void. And then it'll be a two pick play instead of three. So it ends up being okay. If he misses any time, essentially, like if he has to leave the game with that injury, then, you know, that will get voided. So that's always nice. But yeah, 64.5, that's very achievable for him. He frequently gets a lot more than that. And while the Ravens have a great defense, their run defense is their one weakness. I think they're like 24th in yards per carry allowed or something like that. So, and the Chiefs are going to try to run the ball. They kind of have to, especially with Joe Tooney being out. They're going to need to run the ball to take some of the pressure off of Mahomes back there. So that's my three pack there. And guys, remember, if you sign up at Prize Picks with our code DBB, you'll get that 100% deposit match up to $100. Always fun playing with Prize Picks. Appreciate them for sponsoring the show. And remember, guys, With Prize Picks, it's skill-based daily fantasy. You pick 2 to 6 players, decide if they'll go more or less than those projections. The more players you pick, the more you can win, all the way up to 25 times if you go with 6. And at Prize Picks, you're not competing against other people. You're competing against the projections. And make sure to check for those promotions, like this Christian McCaffrey one, for example. And it's not just NFL. After the NFL ends, they'll have NBA, MLB, NHL, PGA, college sports, college basketball, obviously coming up with March Madness, esports, whatever you want, they've got it. Not sure on the curling. I know someone asked about curling. I'm not sure about that one. But Prize Picks entries, you can make them in 60 seconds or less if you know what you want. They offer fast withdrawals, super easy. And again, make sure you use that promo code DBB when you sign up for that 100% deposit match up to $100. And Prize Picks now available in 33 states, over 70% of the U.S., most of Canada as well. So check it out. And thanks again to Prize Picks sponsoring today's show. Let's get to these last couple donations. We got George Costanza with the $2 asking a good question here. What do you think about basically, you know, the idea of Atlanta finally getting a black coach? You know, George says he's always felt that getting that black coach would, you know, mean a lot to the fans and help in the locker room. And yeah, I mean, I think that is a big part of it. Like, Atlanta's one of those cities where I think it's like kind of surprising that we've never had a black coach. It's crazy to me. And Raheem Morris was not hired because he was black. That's ridiculous. It's just, whatever it is in the NFL, we all know why. We got a lot of owners that just won't do it. They just won't hire black coaches, especially really deserving ones. I'm really glad Raheem got the opportunity. I think it does help. I think it is something that's nice to have. I think Atlanta is the perfect city for it. And I think it's way overdue. But I don't think that's why he was hired or anything like that. I think that he was the best candidate that they interviewed, in their opinion. Maybe they will be wrong. We'll see. But I'm excited about the hire. I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good fit for the city, for the fans, and for the players. And, you know, we'll see who the coordinators are. That's going to matter a lot, too. But definitely think that this is a hire that should be good. You know, will it be great? That, I don't know. I mean, I think this is kind of on the trajectory of maybe like a Mike Smith hire, who, again, was the best coach this team has seen. He brought a lot of stability, a lot of sustained success. And you got to have that before you win the Super Bowl, typically. So we'll see if that ends up translating there. And then we have Moonstar with a $50 donation. Moonstar, thank you so much, buddy. Really appreciate that. He says, hopefully that gets you some good Waffle House with that extra menthol flavored seasoning from the Chef de Cuisine. He says, Morris is plugged into the offense and defense. Excited to see the staff that he puts together. Thank you so much, Moonstar. I'm definitely hitting Waffle House at least 2 times while I'm there, probably more. But yeah. Guys, as you know, Senior Bowl next week, I will be in Mobile starting on Monday, and I will have coverage of Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday's practices for you guys. Possibly one of those shows will be a patron show. If not, we'll do an exclusive patron show the following week. But yeah, really appreciate everyone for hanging out with us tonight as we talked about Raheem Morris, broke down this hire. We still need to see the coordinators. We'll still need to see the staff. And most importantly, we'll need to see what the idea is at quarterback, because that is probably the second most critical thing this offseason, was getting the quarterback right, get the coach right, get the quarterback right. And this team could have a big 2024. I don't think this is the same situation as we saw with this team in 2021, where we knew we were signing up for a long rebuild, even though the team really tried to make it seem like they weren't doing that. I think it was pretty obvious that they were going to have to. This team is in a healthy salary cap situation. They have a healthy selection of draft picks, and they really just need to get the quarterback in place. And if they do that, I think the rest of the roster is ready to compete. I don't know if it's Super Bowl caliber at this stage, probably not, but compete for the playoffs, absolutely. And they can continue to build hopefully some success. But I think the chances of Morris having a winning season and going to the playoffs in his first year are drastically higher than Smith's, just from a pure situation perspective. And I think this could go really well, but they have to nail the quarterback. And I know a lot of people were talking about Fields being a bad idea because you'll have to pay him. You don't have to pay Fields for 2 seasons. You're not going to have to pay him next year. So this would be his 4th season. He was drafted in 2021. They will have to decide if they pick up the 5th-year option, which of course they would if they traded for him. But you don't have to sign him immediately. You can wait it out. Like, if you're not convinced after this year, you can wait and then play out the 5th-year option. a lot of teams do sign the extension before the fifth year option actually is, you know, before they end up actually playing on it, but you don't have to. You can always do a short extension like what the Seahawks did with Geno. You could always do the franchise tag after the fifth year option if you're not sure yet. Obviously, it's really expensive, but you don't have to commit immediately. You do have to commit to paying a quarterback on a faster timeline than if you drafted a rookie, but you can't have it all, right? If you go for the rookie, it's probably a slower build. And I'm fine with that. If they can get into position to draft Dane Daniels, like if he does not go three to the Patriots and we can trade up to four with the Cardinals, I'm perfectly happy to do that. But there's a good chance that New England just takes Jaden Daniels at three and then you've got nothing. So we'll see. It's very dicey with the way this draft is shaken out to go up and get that top quarterback. I don't really think it's going to be possible. So you're either waiting at eight for Penix, Bo Nix, whoever your choice is, or you're waiting, or you're going for Justin Fields or another veteran. And I think it would be a mistake to go after Kirk Cousins. I think Cousins is perfectly good, but I just don't think that's the right direction for this team. I think obviously he's getting up there. He's coming off an Achilles injury. I mean, Cousins' best days are behind him. He's still going to play at a high level, certainly better than anything Atlanta's had over the past several years, but that's a short-term thing. I think that would have made so much more sense for Bill Belichick. Don't think it makes as much sense for this new regime to do. But we'll have to see what direction they end up taking. And I do think the chances of it being Justin Fields got a lot higher with the Morris coach, as opposed to Slowick, who was probably going to try to get a rookie in here, or Belichick, who was going to go all out to get like a Geno Smith or Kirk Cousins. But it's certainly not set in stone. We could see some unexpected things, and a lot of it maybe will be to do with these coordinators. So hopefully we'll get some more information on those guys over the next couple weeks. But guys, really appreciate everyone for hanging out with us tonight here on Falcoholic Live. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. Please like, subscribe if you haven't done so already. Really appreciate that. Those help us out. Leave that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. And then, of course, sign up for the channel membership or Patreon. Channel membership more for YouTube viewers. Patreon more for podcast viewers. Appreciate the support there. There's some cool perks there. Early access to recorded shows, early access to podcasts, all that stuff. And then these, we're going to be doing lots of Q&As, live mocks, and all that stuff for those crowds now that we're in the off season. And we really appreciate everyone who is helping out and supporting there. Appreciate everyone who's donated to the Senior Bowl fundraiser this week and over the past month. Really appreciate that. It's definitely coming along. We're getting into pretty good shape there. Really appreciate everyone just do. It's been a rough season and rough last couple of weeks with this coaching search. Now we can start turning our attention more to the off season and getting a better idea of what this team's going to look like in 2024, particularly at the most important position of all. Guys, thank you so much. Appreciate the guys over at Bet Online and the guys at Prize Picks for sponsoring today's episode. Until next time, folks, I'm Kevin Knight. We'll see you on Falcoholic Live next week at the Senior Bowl. Until then, have a great night, folks. Thanks again to Alan Stirk for helping us out as well. Good night, guys.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.